welcome to the Antimatter Radio Show. My name is Jeff Grupp. I'm a semi-retired college instructor and a writer, poet, artist, and so on. Why is this show called the Antimatter Radio Show? You might think it's because of the particle, a set of particles called antimatter particles, but actually that's not my real intention why in calling this show that. It's because, for several reasons, I am against matter, so I am anti-matter. Why would I possibly have such a view? Well, if you look at the world religions and at our most progressive science, which is called quantum physics, both of those are interestingly in unison in holding the theory that matter does not exist. And quantum physics will tell you that because of their scientific experimentation. And the world religions will tell you that because of the experiences that saints and mystics and religious heroes have had through thousands of years. So interestingly, science and religion are totally in agreement on that point. And I think often in our culture, people are fooled into thinking that science and religion are enemies of some sort. And that's because they think that, you know, religion is Oral Roberts or the Dalai Lama or something, and science is a grumpy Darwinist in the biology department. And then they get fooled into thinking that these personalities are what science and religion are, which is not at all the case. If you take, I just mentioned the Dalai Lama, if you take Buddhism, for example, it's an incredibly rich tradition with all kinds of movements and heroes and events and so forth. There's Tibetan Buddhism, there's Japanese Buddhism. And in Buddhism, in general, they hold the theory that reality is made of particles of light and or energy. Now, that's pretty interesting. That sounds exactly like what our modern science, quantum physics, has discovered in the last 100 years. So how on earth could possibly these two areas of research come to the exact same conclusion? Well, one reason probably is because they're both right. That is what reality is made of. This, as Yoda said, we're not this crude matter. You know, we're not, you're not your body. And the reality you see, which is composed of all these colors and surfaces and so forth in front of you, all that matter, you can believe it's there all you want, and fine, go ahead. But strictly speaking, it's not really there. What's really out there? What's really out there is a religious reality. Now, I use the term religious. A lot of people get really distasteful over that because they associate it with, you know, Yahweh and the New Testament or the Old Testament slaughtering people and so forth. But I don't use the word religion that way. I use the word religion in the term context of the term religious experience. And all the religions of the world are bent on religious experience. A lot of people disagree with that, but I don't care. You just have to go and read the religious text. For example, what was St. Paul doing on the road to Damascus when he had his vision of the light of God? Oh, that's interesting. So Christianity, just like Buddhism, is obsessed with the ultimate forms of reality, in this case God, with Christianity being an entity of light. So just like Buddhism, we have the same theme arising there. And what happened to Paul on the road to Damascus? Well, he had an experience of that light, a direct experience, that's mysticism, of that light, and it caused him to collapse. He went into some sort of catalepsy or something because he had such a religious trance, such religious ecstasy, such happiness of some sort. So when you hear people talk about how religion is not Christianity is not mystical, well, then you have to tell me why St. Paul, who basically is the inventor of the entire New Testament, probably really the reason we have Christianity today, why is he having direct experiences of the light of God? Because the definition of mysticism is to have a direct experience of God, or a direct experience of the divine forces, the divine light, whatever the religion holds to be the ultimate power, which always in some way is energy or light, any religion you choose. Mysticism is to have a direct experience of that power. So your consciousness directly touches, so to speak, for lack of a better word, the religious ultimate power. So how could your consciousness do anything but utterly change when it's impacted by such a religious power? So that's the reason why people have near-death experiences or experiences of religious extraterrestrials or of aliens or whatnot, or angels, that is, whatnot, or just traditional Buddhist experiences where you have experience of all of reality being composed of divine matter, or sorry, divine antimatter, divine energy everywhere. The world religions always are involved in some sort of quest for finding out what the divine light is. And the world religions use techniques, though they're often called meditations, whether it's prayer or seated meditations in Buddhism or asceticism in Hinduism. But they always have a similar quest in trying to get a person out of their egotistical state of consciousness, that's sort of your everyday state of consciousness, into a consciousness where you are transcending that level, not concerned with the petty concerns of that level, and where you are living in the happiness of the religious entities of the religion in question. So now back to quantum physics. Now, well, first of all, world religions notice that they are thoroughly based in experience. If you think that Christianity is just about, you know, believing some things and then, you know, having, you know, some sort of ethical system, then you're just forgetting the whole idea of what Jesus was and his going into the desert for 40 days and so forth to meet with the underworld creature in that particular episode. You're forgetting about St. Paul and the road to Damascus, as you just referred to. So the world religions are specifically interested in you having a certain kind of personal experience of the religious entities. Now, take quantum physics, for example. Similarly, it is concerned with experience. Being a science, it is primarily concerned with nothing more at its base than experience. That's what all science comes from, which is experience. Your direct experience of some entity you're studying the question is the data that you compile for that entity in question. So, for example, if you want to study water, what do you have to do? You have to use your eyes and your senses to make certain kinds of observations about what the water is doing and so forth. So if you start off with theories about the water, you say, oh, I believe that the water is just H2O. And there's nothing really more special about it than that. And the water from the water treatment plant out of my city is the same, basically, as the rainwater. Well, notice those are all theories. Those are probably just ideas people told you about. You're not really basing that on direct experience. You didn't go out and measure and study the rainwater versus the water from the treatment plant. And so you're just sort of making some assumptions or theories. Now, that's not really science. What that is some sort of philosophy, or maybe that's even too kind of a term. It's just theory making or assuming. Now, direct experience is, for example, to your consciousness is somehow impacted by bringing yourself in touch with the entity you're studying in question. So why do I bring up water? Well, I've had an interesting experience recently that I want to tell you about. And I'm glad I can do this radio show. I'll tell you more about myself here in just a few minutes, since this is the first show. I just wanted to get right into the issue so you can get a flavor of what this show is like, so if you can find out if it's for you or not. But I want to tell you about a certain experience I've had, which has just really got me thinking. And I know Dr. Len Horowitz, who's on later tonight, is really concerned with the issue of water. But I have been drinking for years filtered water, not just, you know, some $14 filter from Slave Mart or something that doesn't really filter anything out. I've bought the really expensive filters, the $400 filters that take the fluoride out of the water and so forth. And that was a good experience. I did that for several years, but recently I got one of those water machines, the Ecolo Blues, that Alex Jones, for example, always talks about on his radio show. And when I got it, I actually, you know, I kind of wasn't sure if I was going to get it because it was expensive. But I did. I said, you know, I really need to do this. This is this important thing to have for health reasons and so forth. So when I got it, I didn't even start using it right away. I actually sat on it for a month and then finally brought it upstairs and plugged it in and started drinking the water. It tasted really good, so I kind of got in the habit of drinking it. And then all of a sudden, like a week later or something, I just noticed that I was feeling incredible. There's been many times in my life where I've started to feel good. I used to really be very unhealthy. Before I really knew politically and philosophically what was going on in the world, I was, you know, McDonald's person and so forth. This is years ago. But, you know, when I became a vegan, finally, I started to figure things out why I felt so horribly in my early 30s. And then I became a vegan, and that changed my life completely. I felt so good. And then I got into hemp products like hemp milk and so forth, and that changed me quite a bit. And I've been doing growth hormone, HGH, for a year and a half now, and that was really changed my whole life. And now probably the biggest change of all, amazingly, is this water machine. I can't even believe it. I'm not trying to sell the product. I don't really care if you buy it or not. Do whatever you want. Because if you think I'm selling one, trying to sell it, I don't really care. I'm just trying to help out and give you interesting information. Okay, because I just really can't. This just has me, my mind spinning about this water machine. So what happened basically is I started just feeling so much better than I was feeling pretty good already, but I started feeling so much better. And I was just wondering what, and I tried to figure out what was, I started taking more St. John's wort, and I was wondering, is that it? No, that doesn't make any sense. And then I narrowed it down, I finally figured out that it's this water machine. And that's prompted me over the last couple of months to do quite a bit of reading. I know Dr. Horowitz is really into this, this whole concept of how magical water is. That seems to have changed my entire life. And I've been reading this author, Victor Schauberger, who he asserted that water has certain power to it. And it's almost like medicine, real water, like rainwater. It's, I think, the most pure form of water on the planet. And it has a certain power, and it acts like medicine to your body. But then the treated water, even if you filter it as much as it can possibly be filtered, just doesn't have that power. Not only does it not give you certain strengths that the empowered water can give you, it takes away certain things from you. And Professor Schauberger, he was theorized, I got to go a little further in his book, see if he gives any more evidence for this, but he theorized that the water actually harms you, the non-empowered water. So, I mean, the basic point here is that's just such a stunning issue right there. It's almost, I can just almost sense listeners out there saying, oh, I just don't even believe it. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even really believe it either if I were you. It's just so amazing. It's so contrary to everything we've been taught as kids. I mean, you know, we basically have our consciousnesses set up for us, you know, between the age of 0 and 10. And it's very difficult for us to undo some of the basic assumptions that we've learned as children. Like, you know, the idea that matter is real, or that the government is good, or, you know, God does or does not exist, or whatever. I mean, certain things we have that we are taught, you know, that are in our minds are very hard to overturn, no matter how much evidence we have given for the opposing view, and no matter how little evidence we have for the learned assumption. So, I mean, so it's, you know, listeners to this show and people who've heard me on other radio and who have read my books and so forth probably know what I'm all about or not too surprised about what I just said, but it's a very mind-boggling concept to think of water as having some sort of incredible power, some sort of energy that we don't even know us. The professional scientists, the professional academics, they're not, they're apparently completely unaware of this, and they think water is just a, you know, molecule. It appears to have a whole lot more of that. And of course, a lot of listeners to this network, I'm sure, are familiar with Dr. Emoto, his work, and of course, Dr. Horace's work, and there's just a whole lot going on in the universe. It's, I mean, the education we're given in our schools is just shocking in how little it gives. I mean, when I said at the beginning of the show that I was temporarily retired, I think it was. I think that's how I referred to myself. Actually, I've had disagreements with administrations at two of the schools I've taught at, so that's why I'm not teaching, just because I just found myself, even before I really even figured out what was going on years ago when I started teaching, and before it was even really very political, I wasn't really a very political person until the Iraq War started. I mean, I just always found myself from the first day I was teaching always worried about, can I say this? And, you know, can I say this doesn't mean, what that meant was, well, if the administration knew I was saying this, what would they say? Would they frown upon that, or wouldn't they? I mean, I wasn't really worried about my fellow professors or the chair of the department and so forth so much. maybe a little bit the chairs of departments, but really the administrations. They wanted me to just say what everybody already knew. They wanted me to just tell the students in different words their common sense assumptions are true and basically give them the idea that what they learned on through TV, which, you know, pretty much most of them were raised on and it's shaped their consciousnesses, pretty much just don't challenge that at all. I mean, I think the churches are doing this too these days. Pretty much it's everywhere. It's kind of like an Orwell where everybody tells each other a lie and nobody figures out that it's a lie. So we're all doing that with things like evolution and, ideas about Christianity and, political issues and global warming and, I was just thinking about this. We keep talking about this Antarctica ice shelf collapsing in the news. And nobody really asks, can we see the evidence that it's for global warming? Nobody ever talks about the evidence, or any evidence in the news about it being, it's global warming that's doing it, and global warming is caused by, these bad humans. Maybe the underwater, volcanism that's just at an incredible rate these days, like we've never seen, maybe that's heating up the oceans. Well, I mean, not maybe, it is heating up the oceans. There's direct evidence for that. Maybe that's why Antarctica has pieces of it on the edges, interestingly, falling off, because the water's warmer. It's breaking it up. But nobody will ask the questions. Instead, at the mass of humanity, the mob of Americans, we just go along with it. And that's why the Bible calls us sheep, apparently, because we just go along with this. And like my friend Dr. Deagle often says, we're just lambs ready for slaughter. It's really tragic. I mean, we've had these huge brains on our heads. I mean, what are these brains for? Are we just there to be like sheep, to be monkeys? Are we supposed to? I mean, there's something has to be incredibly special about these things. I mean, modern science doesn't even understand much about the brain. Probably a lot of scientists will tell you they understand a lot about the brain, and you can bet if you start asking them questions about what the brain's all about, they're going to tell you, whole huge portions in the front top part of our brains will say, well, we don't know what that does. We've never even seen it, what it does, or we don't have any measurement techniques to figure out what it's doing. Humanity basically is stuck in a slave situation where we're just acting like monkeys. You're telling me that we're supposed to just act like animals when we've got these huge, massive brains. I mean, our brains are four times larger than chimpanzees. They're larger than almost any other animal. Just a couple other animals have similar proportionate body-to-brain ratios, such as dolphins and a couple others. It only can be the case that our brains are meant for absolute... they're meant to give us absolute greatness. I mean, that's why when we read the world religions and we see all these heroes, these telepathic, psychical, scientific geniuses in the myths and religious tales of the world, though that has to be indicative of what we as humans are really all about. I mean, why does it say in all the religions that the humans were created by these creatures from the sky creatures, you can call them, and the creatures from the sky created the humans to be in the image of the sky creatures. Well, that tells you something very special is going on with humans. Well, why do all the religions in the world virtually agree with that? I mean, are we just going to throw that information aside and say, oh, it's just they had active imaginations? I mean, that's ridiculous to do that, especially when you find out how the opposing view, which is typically taken as the scientific view, how incredibly flawed it is. It's just unbelievable. And I can talk about that here in a little bit. I want to talk about some things to do with Darwinism tonight. Opening something up on my computer here right now to go over with that. Well, let me tell you a little bit about me. If I don't stop right now and do that, I'll never get to telling you about myself. So my name is Jeffrey Grupp, or Jeff Grupp, whichever. I've taught at seven different universities in the Michigan and Indiana area. I'm a resident of West Lafayette, Indiana currently. Beautiful city. My favorite city I've ever lived in. I've got a family. I'm a constitutionalist, as in the U.S. Constitution. Very much pro all the Bill of Rights, Second Amendment, our right to bear arms, everything. I mean, I hold the, similar to William Henry, The great scholar that was associated with Jordan Maxwell, I hold that the founding fathers were actually, similar to myself, were bent on the philosophy that we are religious creatures, we are star creatures, and there's some incredible destiny that humans have that they need to fulfill. If you just pick up Thomas Jefferson, for example, you find that in there. I know that we're supposed to believe, a lot of people are telling us now, oh, they're Freemasons and therefore, you know, they're evil and they're part of the New World Order. Well, I published several articles on Infowars.com. Actually, there's one up right now as we speak, on Infowars.com and their news and focus, that I've written. But I'm working on another one. It's going to say this, the Freemasons are completely irrelevant. They have nothing to do with anything. And that's basically in agreement with Mike Cesarian and Jordan Maxwell. And you've got so many people so concerned with Freemasons, this Freemason, that they, the Freemasons are, why are the Freemasons people like Roosevelt or George Bush Jr. and so forth? It's always the puppets that are Freemasons. They have nothing to do with anything. And people get so, think that they're all the evil force of the world. That is rubbish. What they are is just, the ones that we know of who are 33rd degree Freemasons are the puppets of, the New World Order, of the real forces, the real corporate money powers of this world and its secret government. And, I mean, if you go pick up the writings of someone like Manly P. Hall, I mean, take a look at his writings on the astral light that all of you are an astral light. That is a light of consciousness which shines everywhere. It's a key teaching in theosophy. If you go pick up the writings of Manly P. Hall, who writes about that, I really just really have a hard time believing that someone like that is a global government Satanist. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, but it's just really difficult to figure out how that could possibly be the case. I mean, he wrote a lot of stuff. He wasn't trying to publicize a lot of his writings and make them well known and so forth. He was very private in a lot of what he did. And, it seems that the real forces are other secret societies like Skull and Bones and so forth. Even the Bilderbergers are just taking orders from some higher, dark power of the Dark Masters. So anyway, as far as being a constitutionalist, the Founding Fathers are, I mean, I know there's a lot of bad press on them, but I mean, if you go back and look at slavery, I mean, they were fighting slavery. I know that's not always the case. There's problems with Andrew Jackson, for example, and the Native Americans. Obviously, we all know that there's something is wrong there. I mean, he, Trail of Tears and all that. But in general, it was the corporate forces back then that were responsible for slavery. And there were huge, I mean, the people were supposed to believe that, you know, oh, it's the white people that were responsible for slavery. Oh, if that's true, then why if I pick up any history book on, the slave days were, it was not, the white people were not in support of slavery. They were against it. They were just felt powerless, tricked into feeling like they were powerless to do anything against it, so they just went along with it, but they were not for it, especially in places like Europe, but also in America. And it was basically just the big corporate forces. I mean, what's changed? Nothing's changed. I mean, how many of us, we were all tricked into the Iraq War, and none of us support, I mean, hardly any of us support it now, but we were tricked into supporting it back then, so it's the corporate forces that tricked us into it. So what's the difference between now and then? It's the slavery, it's just like the Iraq War. It's the people being sheep. Okay, so anyways, I was supposed to be telling you more about myself, and here I am going off about every wonderful and interesting subject there is. As far as me, I am currently taking time off teaching. I taught philosophy for 10 years, and the last school I taught at was, I taught in the Purdue University system for, it was wonderful being there. It was, probably my second best teaching experience after Grand Valley State University, which is my best. That was a wonderful place to teach at. I taught there a number of years ago. And I've taught in the Indiana University system and also at Western Michigan University where I got my master's degree. I was getting my PhD at Purdue in philosophy, and I have discontinued that, not only because I've just been busy writing books and taking care of my family, but I've sort of lost the spark, I'd say. The academics, I'm really sad to say I've got an incredibly low opinion of academics after being absolutely submerged in that system for the last 15 years of my life, getting my undergrad, master's, and starting PhD. The universities sum it up quickly. The universities run on fads, and they run on corporate money. If you're a scientist and work in a university and you're listening, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you're going to get funding for your research, you need to get, you're getting corporate funding or government funding. And you, to get that funding, you have to give them, tell them what you're going to do in your research, and they'll say yes or no. And you know, and you all know out there, any scientists listening, you know that the interesting topics, they will never let you study. Like if you said you wanted to do research on the astrolite or on, the idea that the Earth is expanding and plate tectonics is wrong, or anything like that. I mean, I can think of zillions of ideas. They will not let you do it because they have specific fads that they want to keep in place, one of which is Darwinism. And I'm going to talk about that right after I finish telling you about myself. So I'm 38 years old, and this radio show is going to be every Tuesday at 10. It's called the Antimatter Radio Show, as you already know. My goal is to get this thing to grow and grow and grow, because this is the voice of the future. The voices out there like Dr. Deagle and his radio show, Dr. Horowitz, his radio show, Alex Jones, this is the future, okay? And we can prove it's the future. How can we prove it's the future? With the web bots, and I'll talk about that soon. That's what's wonderful about this radio show. I can talk about any of the things that I never could talk about in at the university. I was just so incredibly censored, as I said. This, even from day one, I just always had to worry, am I being too free? Am I using my free speech too much? You know, am I not just conforming to what everybody else says and getting the students too excited and too filled with passion? Those are all no-nos. Yeah, this is the voice of the future. The future is a world of humans living closer to the forests and the deserts, and the humans living more in their innate, inner, divine spark, their astral light they have. That's what we're all made of. We're all made of spiritual energy. That's easy to prove. It takes me 5 seconds to prove that. Here's how I can prove that. We all believe, somewhat erroneously, that our consciousness is in our brain. Okay, but if I rip open your brain, say, or if I look inside your brain, like if I was doing surgery on you or something, for example, and you were conscious, like you can do with epileptics, perform brain surgery on them when they're conscious, and I say to you, what are you feeling right now? And you say, I'm thinking about my child, I feel love. And I look inside your brain and look for love. I don't see it. All I see is brain matter. I see blood and brain cells and axons and so forth. If I can see that finally. So what does that mean? That means that we don't find what are called phenomenological objects in the brain. Phenomenological objects are things like love, things like hate, anger, boredom. The thought of 2 + 2 = 4, or the thought of I love my dog, for example. Nobody knows what those things look like. Yeah, you know what they look like if you look inside your head. Sorry, inside your consciousness, if you close your eyes and look at your own consciousness, if you feel your feelings or think about your thoughts. That's the essence of religious meditation, by the way. But anyways, we don't see those if we look at the brain. So that's, what is that? That's simple evidence that consciousness is not the brain. Consciousness is something coinciding with or partially coinciding with the brain and or nervous system or your body. Of course, the brain is not the only place where consciousness is. There's all kinds of, why is there dopamine in the heart, for example? I mean, isn't dopamine supposed to be a chemical associated with consciousness? Of course it is. It's not just in the brain, though. It's in other parts of your body, like the heart. There's a book I'm staring right here on my bookshelf by Childry and Martin. It's called The Heart Math Solution, published a number of years ago, which is all about that very topic right there. So the idea, it's interesting that Aristotle, not one of my favorite philosophers, but he's got some interesting things to say. Thousands of years ago, he said that you think not in your head, but in your heart. Maybe he was onto something like this. But anyway, we need to get out of this. I want to talk about archaeology and Darwinism here. So let me just finish telling you about myself. I've got a website, two websites I want to tell you about. One is abstractatom.com. That's the atom is A-T-O-M, like as in atoms and particles. That site's undergoing a huge revision, but you can at least get an idea of this mission that I'm on with others that have like interests. I've got another website called antimatterradio.com, which I'm currently building, and in either of those sites you can get to all my old radio archives from other shows, this show, and I've been on the radio for several years now on shows like Alex Jones and Dr. Deagle and so forth. And also I've got a bunch of books that I've written. One is called, my book I'm most excited about now is called Telementation. That is just a sort of a synonym for the law of attraction, which I think listeners of this wonderful network are very familiar with, to say the least. Telementation is like the law of attraction, but slightly different. The law of attraction, I take as being really defined by the wonderful authors of that incredible book, The Secret, which is, I'm happy to say, so popular now, with a slight variation from that. In The Secret, they kind of focus on things like visualizing and thoughts, and then feelings are sort of either equal levels to those or maybe even not quite as important. Telementation basically puts feeling as the most important issue by far in carrying out the law of attraction. In other words, its thesis is the idea that if you want to be successful with the law of attraction, you need to be focusing on a certain kind of feeling state of consciousness inside you that I describe in detail in the book. And if you do that, telementation, law of attraction is absolutely simple to have success at. And it is very enjoyable. It's utterly spiritual. Now, that is slightly different than other authors I've seen talk about the law of attraction. And the book is coming out, it's being published by Tree of Life Publications in the summer, but you can actually buy it on my website, abstractatom.com or antimatterradio.com. Now, you can download it for just, I think it's $3 to download. You can get the link right on my site there. It's on every page of my website. Or you can get a hard copy for, I think, $9 or something. So anyway, I'll talk about that every week, that book. I'm just utterly excited about that book. It's just the key to human. It's the greatest power in the universe is not magnetism or this and that. The greatest power in the universe is this, what I call in the book, your inner starseed. It's a certain feeling state you have inside you that shapes reality. And we all need to find that, because we can all shape the world exactly as we want it to be. As the authors of The Secret correctly say, it's the next human revolution, and I think that we're going in that direction. So, and I've got another book I've written called Corporatism, The Secret Government of the New World Order. Anybody who listens to Alex Jones knows about that book, I'm sure. It's been advertised on that site, and I've been on that radio show talking about the book, and it's basically just a straightforward but utterly unique look at the secret government that controls the world. And the secret government is not the Freemasons. The secret government is something above them. It's not utterly clear what it is, but it's some financial power. It is what holds the financial power of the world. And it is incredibly, it's a dark force, which humans, we all need to get off the couch, turn off this TV, throw the beer away, and figure out exactly what it is that's ruling this world. This secret government, it's not exactly clear what it is, but we need to figure out what it is, because it's shaping everything. It's controlling our consciousnesses. It's shaping who we are, because it controls the churches, it controls the religious, or the all the religions, it controls the schools, the TV, everything. If you just look, just for a second, question things, you can see it's the signs of it's absolutely everywhere. Anyway, this book, Corporatism, that I've written, which you can get to on from my website, or it's just at Amazon.com. It's published by Progressive Press, which is, of course, a very high-level political activist publisher. This book outlines everything, and the readers have been quite pleased with it. I'm just, I just like to talk about these books. I want to make a little bit of money off them, but I really don't. I have a day job, of course. But it's just these books that what I put my heart and soul into, and it's just really, I just hope others can find that joy also. Then I've got some other things on my website. I've got some of my lecture notes. Students of mine have just been really excited about my classes in the past, so I put up, you can buy copies of my lecture notes. You can download any of them for a couple bucks or get hard copies for, they're all, I think, under 10. And some of my articles, some of my academic professional work, I've published in Buddhism. I'm a Buddhist, actually, if you can't tell. And some of those are up there. So you can check out any of that stuff that you want, but that's all of it's intense. This radio show is called, the subtitle of this radio show is Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Intensity. The reason I have that subtitle for this radio show is because Life, Liberty, that I want this to be, so that's a mixture of constitutionalism, which is one of my main interests overall, and then intensity. What can intensity mean? Well, that basically just means spiritual experience, which then, of course, means many things, anything from sacred geometry to the study of energy to alternative medicine, alternative spirituality, telementation, which I was just talking about, consciousness, parapsychology, religious experience, Buddhism, the study of our ancient cultures, which the academics have pretty much... we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But there is just, there's a lot going on in the world, and we need shows like this and so many of the other ones on this network to really re-educate the world. Whoever needs to unlearn what they have learned, to quote Yoda again. And so anyway, that's enough about me. So my website's abstractatom.com, A-T-O-M, and antimatterradio.com. And I hope all of you enjoy them. So I want to talk a little bit more. Man, there's so much I want to talk about. It'll be good when this show gets up to several hours a week, because I've got a lot to say, because my students have never could fit everything in that I wanted to say in my lectures when I was still teaching. My students knew that. But I want to talk about Darwinism first, and then I want to talk about world religions and archaeology in the 20 minutes I have left. First of all, you'll hear on every single show that I have me absolutely castigating Darwinism, telling you how it's an incorrect philosophy. Notice I said philosophy, not science, and there's nothing to it, and it's all just a great hoax to make you think that you're basically just an idiotic animal rather than a light creature, a spiritual consciousness with incredible potential. So how on earth could I possibly say that Darwinism is so incorrect? How could I possibly say all, you know, the PhDs and stuff out there are wrong? Well, first of all, I do have a degree in anthropology from the University of New Mexico that I earned back in the early 90s, wonderful place. It was a wonderful time. I worked with Jane Lancaster, Kim Hill, others. They were wonderful. But I started to realize in the years following that there was something strange about that. I mean, I got a whole degree in anthropology, took archaeology classes and whatnot. Why did I never talk about pyramids one time in those classes when pyramids are all over the world? They're underwater and they're in Egypt and China, the biggest pyramid I think in the world. I think it's called the Xian Pyramid in China. It's three times bigger than the Giza Pyramid. I mean, how many people even knew that? I also started finding out other things, that this philosophy of Darwinism was basically just assumed to be true in my anthropology degree. We would just debate the particulars of it. We never would question. Nobody ever came in and said, okay, we're going to present the opposing point of view here, that Darwinism is not correct, and this other theory or set of theories, ABC, are contenders. Nobody ever did that once. You just assume it's true and you go. So I guess that was part of to be expected with the degree. But I learned in later years that, no, that's really, really bad, because the theory itself has nothing to it. Now, when I say Darwinism, I'm specifically talking about the idea that humans come from chimpanzees. Now, we're basically given two major pieces of evidence for that by our professional academics. The first one is the idea that there are these old fossils from millions of years ago that look like they look like they're chimpanzees 5 million years ago, and then they become slowly more and more human-like through the millions of years until the present. And there's these massive gaps of, you know, sometimes a million years where there's no bones, and then we're just supposed to believe that this creature, this bone set that looks like an a baboon or something kind of is my ancestor or something. There's no real proof. I'm just supposed to assume that. I have a direct lineage with that creature. So that's a pretty gargantuan assumption. It's very unscientific to say, to be very kind about it. And then you find out further that, you know, when they find these bones, they often find them all smashed up into pieces. But they'll try, scientists will take sometimes 30 years to try to piece them together and try to figure out how they were pieced together. And they have huge debates and fights and everything about it, and nobody even really knows if they put them together right. And then you find also that the way they do put them together, they look like baboons. They don't even look like any kind of creature over and above a baboon in very many ways. They just look like variations of baboons or chimpanzees. It's just pretty much a big mess, and not really sure why nobody's questioning this. I guess maybe a lot of people have jobs to keep and so forth in professional academia. But then there's all kinds of these other skulls found, like, let me get the name of one here. I'm looking at, if all of you would check out an article from Live Science, that's one word, March 29, 2007, article is called "Controversial Human Ancestor Gets a Major Facelift." We have a quote by none other than Richard Leakey, talking about these rearrangements, these trying to piece together these skulls, and he says either we toss. He basically in that article says that the piecing together doesn't make any sense, and if it doesn't make any sense, then this whole theory we've built up of our ancestors coming to us through time, gradually becoming chimps to humans, has to be thrown out. And another thing, there's just so much to say about this. Another thing you find out that academics are amazingly and unfortunately doing is anytime a skull is found that doesn't fit their preconceived pet idea of that we started off as simple chimps and became more complicated humans. Whenever something is found outside of that pattern, they just throw it aside and say, oh, it doesn't fit the theory, therefore we have to get rid of it and not consider it at all. We'll just let somebody else study it at a later time to figure out what's wrong, why it's wrong. That's just, I mean, come on. Everybody listening has to be outraged by this. This is just thought control. They're telling us that some theory makes the evidence. They're ignoring evidence in order to build up a theory. The theory, of course, being that humans come from chimps. I mean, so it's just amazing, unbelievably. I mean, that there's a lot, lots of secrets you can figure out about how the world works with that simple thing right there. I mean, if any of you doubt this, then just go ahead and check out a nice little article from none other than Science Daily, March 21, 2001. The article is called "Skull of New Early Human Relative Found in Kenya," and then basically it just says it's a shocking that they found in the article. They talk about how they found it made a shocking discovery of how a skull doesn't fit the assumed theory of how humans become 5 million years ago. Chimpanzees started becoming more complex, started becoming more human-like through the 5 million years. And then there's another article that talks about the same thing. There's so many of these articles. There's another one from Science News. Bruce Bauer published it, July 13, 2002, volume 162, number 2, page 19. It's called "Evolution Surprise: Fossil Find Uproots Our Early Ancestor." He talks about the same thing, how they found a fossil that contradicts all the theory, but will any of the scientists consider it? Answer is no, they won't. And I know that for a fact. I've confronted them in universities with this information, and they just say, oh, no, that just doesn't fit the data, and I don't want to discuss it. And you know, it's just an absolute atrocity that humans are living this way. And we're theory builders is what we are. We follow theory. We don't follow our senses. What is real knowledge? Real knowledge, about the physical world at least, is what is revealed to us through our senses. Okay, but, you know, the sky is blue. Any of you can go verify that by just looking up. If somebody tells you the sky is green, you can quickly disprove that by going and looking up, and you never see the sky as being green. Okay, so, but what you have humans doing globally, and it's almost the worst of all in our academic institutions, is you find the scientists saying, No, the sky is green. In other words, what they'll do is they'll find some theory which has, they're not checking it against reality, they're not checking for some evidence, and then they will support the theory. Even when contrary evidence comes along, we'll say, oh no, thank you, but don't bother me with the facts, please. So it is really too bad. There's so much to say. I'm kind of talking as fast as I can here. In my book, I forgot to mention, I have, like I said, the book Telementation is coming out. You can buy it now with the final copy on Lulu. .com, which is linked through my website for just a couple bucks. And it is coming out in its formal copy from Tree of Life Publications this summer. But also I have another book coming out from Progressive Press called The Telescreen that's coming out this summer. And you can also, however, buy its final copy on my website is, well, actually, sorry, you have to go to, yeah, no, it is listed on my website in the books tab on the left-hand side. It talks about all these things in the first chapter of the book, how certain ideas have come in to control our consciousness, and the ideas are not verifiable in any way. They're just incorrect ideas. It's really tragic. So, I mean, instead of thinking of ourselves as what we are, I mean, if you look at yourself and look at what you are, you find out that you're this creature with this mysterious, massive organ, which really extends through your whole body, but it has its sort of power source in your head called the brain. And it has this capability to have these tremendous religious experiences and to create art and the unbelievable mathematics, that is, and it can apprehend really almost, it seems, unlimited things. We can apprehend, grasp, understand anything. But instead, what we basically in our country are thinking of the brain as is just being sort of something we use to watch TV with or talk about mindless, unsatisfying, empty subjects with, like American Idol and so forth. So that's what this does to us when we follow theories rather than use ours. We have senses for a reason, and that's to discover reality. We know what we do about the physical world through our senses. Now, we know what we do about the spiritual domain, which is the real domain. Really, the physical is only partially real or unreal. It depends. We can talk about that in a later show. And what's actually real is the spiritual domain, which the quantum physicists are starting to uncover. It's a domain of energy and intensity, as I like to say. It's a good word. I'll tell you why I have that word intensity chosen in the later program. But the spiritual domain we apprehend also with our senses, but not our five physical senses. We apprehend that with what you can call our astral eye. And some people talk about the pineal gland in our it's not really part of the brain, as a professor, what's his name? I forgot the name of that professor who wrote the book, The Spirit Molecule, about DMT. He's a medical professor at U of New Mexico. That's actually where I got my degree also. The pineal gland is, it's almost like an eye inside your head. Now, what in the world is an eye? And it's in all kinds of animals have this. Why? And apparently a legend says, and I've never seen any evidence for this, but legend says that that thing becomes active and high religious experience. So it's pretty interesting that a lot of our high religious experiences are experiences of light, of having consciousness of divine, ecstatic light, being everywhere, being everything. And then the pineal gland is this eye deep inside of our head, right behind our forehead, which can apparently apprehend some kind of light or something. Maybe it apprehends the spiritual light. We'll have to, if the universities are not giving us this information, so maybe we have to figure this out ourselves. I mean, maybe that's what we should have been doing all along, trying to, you know, not depend on this big government anyways. But that's why all through the religions, whatever religion you want to choose from, ancient Greeks, Hindu, whatever, they've always been obsessed with talking about the religious heroes of having pine cones on their head or having, you know, the Hindus where they have the dot between their eyes. That all represents ultimately the pineal gland. I think David Wilcox absolutely wonderful researcher. Talks a lot about, he's got the best information I've seen on this topic. There's also another book called Light, Medicine of the Future, which I'm currently reading, published by Bayer & Company, that's discussing this quite a bit. And, well, there's just, so much to say. It's hard to fit it all in. But, humans are, well, if we didn't come from monkeys, then we have to ask the question, where exactly did we come from? And really we have to follow the evidence. That, I mean, if we want to know things, usually the way to find out is with evidence. That's the best technique for learning things. If we use things like belief or superstition or whatnot, that usually fails us. Now, I just want to say for the record, the position I hold about the world religions is that I hold every single one is absolutely literally true, and every single one is talking about exactly the same story. So, for example, let's just say what this really means here. If, for example, ancient Aztec religions say that the moon did not exist in the sky 30,000 years ago, then since I hold the position that the religions are literally true, then I will hold that it's literally true that the moon was not in the sky 30,000 years ago. Okay? Because since I hold that religions are literally true. Now, it's pretty interesting when you look into the issues of the moon that the moon has all kinds of these unbelievable anomalies, and it almost shouldn't exist. Like, I just would refer you to a book called Beginnings, The Sacred Design by Bonnie Gaunt. Probably one of the best books I've ever read. It talks all about this. And then there's another book called Who Built the Moon, written by two Freemasons who also do a wonderful job of pointing out that the moon doesn't make any sense. It did not come about from some spontaneously, randomly created solar system. It was put there. So, and then we can talk about this more in future shows, but I just said something interesting. An ancient religion may be onto the fact of something stunning about the moon, which modern science is not even aware of. Apparently, modern professional science, it is. There's lots of amateur scientists. Of course, all the best science is done by amateurs. History shows that. Einstein is a perfect example. Now this brings us to the most profound issue of all. I'm glad that I'm closing on this note. We've only got 5 minutes left. Sciences, true science, not this garbage that we get, this propaganda, fad-pushing stuff that we get out of the Discovery Channel or, you know, our universities, whatever, but true science and actual religion, not this fake garbage religion, you know, Jerry Falwell and all this kind of stuff. But actual religion and actual science are talking about the same thing, are in perfect agreement, and they both have all the same discoveries to make. So, for example, if ancient religion says that humans were created 6,000 some years ago, and virtually every single religion on the earth says that that's the case. How amazing is that? I mean, religions that apparently have nothing to do with each other, have no known connection. Little teeny rainforest religions where the people have been isolated for tens of thousands of years, as far as we know from any other culture, come up with the same exact religious premise. Well, if that's the case, that's what the religions say, then we can, according to my theorization here, my experience from what I've discovered in my research, then science should lead us to the exact same conclusion of what the world religions tell us. Oh, and what do you know? Science is not, what does science tell us? Well, we don't have any examples of a link from animals, chimpanzees that is, or any of these hominids, which are not human, like Homo habilis or whatever. We don't have any bones to link us humans to them. Our DNA is out of sync with, I think we have an extra chromosome, or we lost a chromosome compared to chimpanzees or something. That is incredibly mysterious. There's all kinds of asymmetries between us and animals, like our brain size is the best asymmetry of all. And also our religious experience humans are made for religious experience. That's, we can get into that in great detail in a future show. And it appears that other animals, I think Jane Goodall wrote about chimpanzees seem to have a real mild religious experience, but humans are made for it. If you doubt that, go pick up any world religious text or go read the writings of Niels Bohr, for example, the great physicist. It seems that that is a huge difference between us and animals. So anyway, the point is we're getting to this, and we don't have much evidence of humans existing too much further back than several thousand years ago. But the point isn't the exact dates, because people like Michael Cremo and so forth may show that we could exist for millions of years. But the point is that we don't have any kind of linkage between humans, wherever they came from, popped out of nowhere, as if they were created, engineered by some, what do the world religions say? They say that we came from the sky creatures. Creatures came from the sky and created us. And if you look at the evidence we have, it does seem we just popped out of nowhere, had these great technologies all of a sudden, as Graham Hancock has pointed out. All kinds of mysterious things. But if you look closely at it, the world religions and the sciences, the true science, are in complete agreement, and it's absolutely the most wonderful thing, and all of us should just be ecstatic about this. And we've got such an opportunity to mend all this damage that's been done through us in history with, thinking that the religions are this and sciences are this and they're at war with each other. What we have is the wrong idea of religion, the wrong idea of science. True science and true religion are one. And they're all about human consciousness and spiritual experience and us being the conscious creators of the world and the universe. In Buddhism, the primary tenet of Buddhism is that consciousness creates reality. And we as humans are doing that all the time, whether we know it or not. The point is to try to find out how you, as a person, as Yoda said, gain control of this inner star seed you have, this inner deep feeling consciousness you have, to create a reality that's exactly what you want. All of us can do this, we just have to know what to do. You're not gonna learn it from watching TV, you're not gonna learn it by eating hot dogs all day. You're gonna learn it by taking care of yourself and being concerned with yourself, realizing how unbelievably important you are and how incredible the mystery of what humanity is really all about. And until we do that, we humans are just going to continue to be slaves, as we have been for a long time now. And it's not pretty. In America, things are getting more and more onto that path than they have been in 150 years. And it's really time for Americans to realize, and people of the world to realize, that what they really are, and it's not physical, and it's not matter, and the real forces of the universe everywhere, flowing through us and all around, are forces of light, forces of non-matter, forces of antimatter. That's why this is the Antimatter Radio Show. So I hope that all of you have enjoyed this show, and listen to me each week, and we'll build this show up. We'll get it several days a week, and we'll unify with we'll get callers in the future, and we'll talk about all these issues in greater detail. And I hope all of you can check out my books and some of my writings. I've got a lot of free writings on my websites, and I think that the message that I have to give is a definite advancement over most of what I've heard from the people that I've learned from. So I believe that this is a special radio show which can make us all realize what we really are. We can get on the path and the goal for what we really are supposed to be all about, and that is a spiritual path to unite with each other in the cosmos, because we're not, just like it says in Genesis 1, we are in God's image. So you are none other than a piece of God. Every single person listening is a piece of God. So thank you very much for listening.